Friday night is definitely much better than a Tuesday night. Last time we had people up on the rafters, and Friday night's much easier. But thank you all for coming, even if it's a Tuesday. But it's not snowing yet. It's coming. So I was thinking about a topic that might be a nice topic to share with all of you. Thinking what would be a nice topic. There's some young bhaktas here. They like stories. We all like stories. So my thoughts went to a section of the Tattva Sandarbha little seminar that I just completed. It was very invigorating, preparing and presenting, and as some of you may know, the Tattva Sandarbha is the first of six books that can be described as a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, or can be described as a comprehensive presentation of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It can be said that it's a preliminary commentary on the entire Vedanta Sutra and all of its different parts. Lots of things can be said about it. But the first section that we spent time in New Jersey discussing was the Pramana Kanda section of Tattva Sandarbha. What's that? Pramana Kanda section. Pramana means proof, or evidence, or the means of knowing something. If you know the word in English, it's epistemology. Sounds really fancy, epistemology. Well, what's that? It's pramana. It's how you know something. So at the beginning, the invocation verse, Jiva Goswami writes, "Let Krishna be glorified. Jayate Shri Krishna." That's what the book is about. So before speaking about Sri Krishna, Jiva Goswami says, first we should consider what's the best means of knowing the subject that we want to talk about, Krishna. And the whole section is establishing the Srimad Bhagavatam is the best means. But it's step by step by step by step. And then people that say, well, wait a minute, you took the wrong step. And he responds and says, no, I took the right step because. So it's brilliant. And one of the little sections, or subsections actually, is the various Puranas. Puranas is a section of Vedic literature. Itihasas and Puranas are called the Smriti section. They're amongst the Smriti section of the Vedas. And the Puranas, he spends a lot of time explaining that for most people that take a world religion course here at the opposite, that the four Vedas are the Vedas and anything other than that's not the Vedas. You ever heard that one before? You know, the Puranas and Itihasas, anyone takes a, you don't even have to take a course, just like live around a little bit. And anyway, so it was prevalent at his time also. It goes back to Jaimini. Well, anyway, I won't go into too many details. He spends a lot of time establishing that the four Vedas are Vedic and the Itihasas and Puranas are equally Vedic. In fact, those that accept the Puranas are Upurusheya Shabda, they're perfect sources of knowledge. They say it. If you accept that the Vedas are the final authority, the Vedas say they're Vedic. They're as Vedic as we are. They describe them as the fifth Veda. And there's a whole section on why, what's this fifth Veda thing? What does that mean? So, the section I wanted to discuss is the various Puranas, they really eulogize the Bhagavad Purana. Just to put it, you know, in a something of a modern context, supposing I'm a graduate student, and I have a, you know, a deep pondering question, and I go to an assembly of the heads of all the departments of the entire university, and they're giving me an opportunity to ask a burning question. And everybody in the room says, whatever the question is, you can ask that fellow over there. He's the best authority amongst all of us. And they all say the same thing. Now, you're all educated people. Is that going to happen in academia? No way. Something else goes on in academia. But the Puranas all say the Bhagavad Purana is the best. They're very specific about it. Specific to the point where they say, in case you're not sure what the Bhagavad Purana is, here's how you identify the Bhagavad Purana. It has 18,000 verses. It has 12 cantos. It was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. It tells the story of Ritrasura. It describes the Hayagriva Brahma Vidya and some other things. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It establishes the meaning of Mahabharata. And I'll show you the next slide. It's a list of 9 things. Now, common, I didn't know this until I read Tattvasandarbha, but common during Jiva Goswami's time, there were a group of people, scholarly people, who accepted that the Devi Bhagavat was that one that all the Puranas were saying that that's the best one. And they had the reason. And, whoops, where's that list? I don't see the list. I guess I left it out. There's, we'll go back. There's, in Garuda Purana and Agni Purana and one other Purana, I can't remember which one, says this Bhagavad Purana is so important that if you make as a gift this Bhagavad Purana on a Hema Simha, a golden throne, well, golden lion, Hema Simha, so then you'll go back to Godhead, you'll attain the perfection of life. So those scholars say, just see, Devi rides on a lion, and she's a golden lion. So it's about Devi Bhagavat, because in Devi Bhagavat there's a description of the Ritrasura in Devi Bhagavat. It has 18,000 verses, it has 12 cantos. In the beginning, the first line of Devi Bhagavat is a Gayatri mantra to Devi. It's commentary on Devi, on Gayatri. So I see it's about Devi Bhagavat. But there's 4 other things that don't match, that several of the Puranas say that this Bhagavad Purana that's the best is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. Well, Devi Bhagavat wasn't spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. And it's glorification of Lord Vishnu. Devi Bhagavat doesn't glorify Lord Vishnu. And in Devi Bhagavat, the story of Ritrasura is told, but it's a different story than what's found in the Bhagavatam. And specifically, in the Ritrasura story, there's a relationship with this Hayagriva Brahma Vidya. So that's part of what I'm going to share with you this evening. And then really what I want to do is get to a section where Ritrasura is disclosing his amazing God consciousness. He demonstrates that he's on the topmost Uttama Adhikari position, although he doesn't look like it, he looks very different. you'll see a nice picture of the trusser. So the Bhagavatam's description of the story of Vritrasura goes back to a section in the sixth canto where Lord Indra is having a big festival in Indraloka, and it's a glorify Indra festival on Indraloka. So all the Kinnaras and Apsaras and Gandharvas, here's the musicians, you think, looks like we're done this, and honoring Indra. So in the midst of all this joyous celebration, the spiritual master of the demigods, Brihaspati, enters into the assembly, and well, most of the people are paying obeisances to the spiritual master of the demigods, except this fellow over here. He's too much filled with himself. He didn't even notice that Shukracharya has come. Excuse me, Brihaspati has come. So Brihaspati understood the mind of his disciple, Indra. So he didn't say anything. He just quietly left the assembly. And not only left the assembly, he left Indraloka. And when the festival was all over, the wife of Indra, when they went back to their palace chamber, said, "Did you notice what happened?" "No, what happened?" "You disrespected Brihaspati." And he just turned and left the assembly. So Indra had an uh-oh experience. You know that one? So he sent a search in all directions to find Brihaspati. They looked in his residence. He wasn't in his residence. They looked in the temple. He wasn't in the temple. They looked here, they looked there, and they looked everywhere. And Brihaspati was gone. And bad news travels fast. They didn't have email. Now it travels faster. Facebook and all those other media things. But the Daityas came to know. And when the Daityas came to know, they told Shukracharya. Shukracharya said, "Perfect. The power of the demigods rests with Brihaspati. Brihaspati's gone." You know what that means? All their power is gone. Daityas, get your weapons. Let's go. And so the Daityas got their weapons and took over Indra's palace. They took over the whole Indraloka. So what one day, the subtext is, when you're not a pure devotee, you can very easily experience happiness one day and distress the next day. Then again, happiness the next day, and then again, distress the next day. Right? Sukha and dukkha. Just, there's an option that you become pure in devotion and you're just fixed in transcendence with transcendental happiness. But Indra isn't there yet. It's a part of the lesson of all of this. So what did Indra do? Indra, this Brihaspati leaving, Indra went to Lord Brahma along with the demigods and pleaded with Brahma for advice what to do. Brahma admonished him and said, "But I'll give you a recommendation of what you can do. Until Brihaspati decides to come back and forgives you, there is a very qualified person who can help you with your situation. His name is Vishwarup. Vishwarup is a very qualified Brahmin. He's young, he's the son of Trashta, and both are eminently qualified. So you go to Vishwarup and plead with him to give you his guidance as a Brahmana, and he will help you in your situation." So Indra was a little hopeful, And he went to, this is a painting, they're going before Lord Brahma seeking solace. So they went to Vishwarup. And here you see Vishwarup has a unique feature. He has three different heads. One is for eating, one is for chanting mantras, and the other is for having a conversation with Indra like this. So they made their appeal. Brahma has sent us. You are a very liberal Brahman. Please help us, you know, with details. So Vishwarup said, it's very difficult saying yes, but you've asked it, so how do I say no? And one of the difficulties is when you come to me to be your Purohit, that kind of priest, then the Purohit takes on the karmic reactions of the person for whom he's representing. But by the strength of Brahminical culture, I can overcome that problem. Then he said another is, because I am the, you're my elders and superiors, and you're asking me to be your Brahmin, you know, the leader of your group, but you're my superiors. But I can do it as a matter of service because you're asking me. And the third problem is, it is the duty of the person who's taking on the service of a Brahmana to give some dakshin. And the nature of a person who receives dakshin is they can very easily become contaminated and attached to the dakshin, especially you're demigods, you're very, very wealthy. And one's mind might start to think, oh, here they come, I'm going to get some wealth. And then one becomes fallen, that one's consciousness becomes contaminated and impure. But then he provided a solution for that one too. He said, whatever you may give as dakshin, I'll simply use that for worshipping my deity, and then I won't be attached. It'll be all for the deity. It goes to Krishna. So he accepted the position as their priest. And the painting shows he gave to Indra this series of mantras or stotras called Narayana Kavacha. This whole chapter, Narayana Kavacha prayers, and essentially they're mantras that by saying the mantras and touching different parts of the body by mantra, his body would be protected by Kavacha, or by a shield. We do a similar thing when we apply Tilak, if we do it properly. We touch a certain part of the body and say, Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha, etc. Om Govindaya Namaha. So, like that, it's very long, it's not just so short, but the principle is the same. In other words, by our founder Acharya's kindness, we're given our own little kavacha. It's for protection. And not just apply the tilak on your forehead, the other parts of your body, and not just apply tilak, but say the mantra and meditate on the Supreme Lord. That's what mantras are meant for, meditating upon the person who is being named. So in any case, Vishwarup gave to Indra this Narayana Kavacha. Indra followed according to the Brahminical guidance. Now he's happy again. He's feeling very empowered and invincible. And so Indra is very thankful for Vishwarup. And then he gets this understanding that Vishwarup is really good. He knows these mantras very, very, very nicely. What other mantras do you know? And he found out that Vishwarup knows how to produce Somarasa. Andrew was really happy to hear that. You know how to produce Somarasa. Whoa. Can you do some Somayagyas? Sure, I'll do some Somayagyas. And you know, when brahmanas chant so many mantras, most of the people who are seated there, they don't know what they're chanting and the meaning and so forth. So one of the things that Vishwarup did when chanting the mantras is he would cite the names of the persons who were to receive the Soma Rasa. So along with the demigods' names, he recited some of the names of some of his relatives on his mother's side. But that was a problem because, for Indra at least, because his mother was from the Daitya dynasty. His father, Trashta, wasn't. His father was, you know, a Vaishnava. She was a Daitya. And when Indra found out, what? You're saying mantras to give Soma Rasa to the Daityas? He cut off his heads. Then he had another uh-oh experience. Uh-oh. I'm gonna get it. So he went to go do austerities for a long time. Then there's details. Although some purification was there, there was some remaining reactions, and he distributed 1/4 of those reactions in different ways without the detail. But that wasn't good enough because the father of Vishwarup was really upset. And the father of Vishwarup, Trashta, knew more mantras than his son knew. So he performed this Vedic yajna that was intended to produce a creature, there's meat Vritrasura, that would destroy Indra. But there was a little problem. And the little problem was he pronounced one syllable incorrectly. One syllable. So in Sanskrit, at the ending of the word, it can be Indra Chatro or Indra Chatroho. He missed the Chatroho part and just said Indra Chatro, which means that Indra would kill him. Instead of he would kill Indra. And it's another message. I mean, the whole canto is, the title of the canto is Prescribed Duties for Mankind. That's the title of the canto. And the message at the very beginning of the canto, which is important that it's at the beginning, the prescribed duty for mankind is devotional service. And devotional service that begins with the chanting of the holy name. And Sukadeva Goswami narrates the whole story of Ajamila, because there is the theology of the holy name, Namadi, beginning with the holy name, but the whole process of devotional service. If one engages in the process of devotional service, even if there's some discrepancy, Krishna is there, and Krishna corrects the discrepancy. Even if it's a big discrepancy, there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabha. You know the verse? Apichet means even if. Means it's not going to happen. Supposing there isn't going to be a winter in Detroit. Just supposing, it's not going to happen. Just stick around. You know, if you haven't lived in Detroit, you'll find out. There's winter in Chicago, or in Detroit. But supposing there's no winter in Detroit. That's what apichet means. It's not going to happen, but supposing it happens. Apichet. Su durachar. Now, achar means behavior or conduct. And dur-achar means bad behavior. And so dur-achar means really bad behavior. Major. Even if there's really bad behavior, so dur-achar. However, if bhajate mam ananyabhak. Ananyabhak is undivided devotion. If one engages in Krishna's undivided devotion, sadureva samantavya. Krishna says, I consider that person saintly. Why? He personally, the next verse, I personally correct the situation. Not like we go out of our way to make some durachar or sudurachar. But if it happens, Krishna corrects it. Why? Because he's kind, especially upon those who wish to be close to him. He helps them become close to him. However, distinct is this situation. That's the karma kanda situation. The karma kanda situation is, if there's a little discrepancy, you won't get the right result, or you can get the opposite result. So the qualification of the brahmana to chant the mantras impeccably is essential, and in this age there are such brahmins. So supposing you go to a brahmin and say, I'd like you to perform a yajna. I'm about to begin a business venture, and I'd like it auspiciousness to be created for the beginning of this business venture. Or, I have a daughter, I'd like a yajna, so I have a very qualified husband for my daughter, and he gets one syllable wrong. And the business is a total failure, and the man that is married to his daughter is a creep, a monster of some type or another, because he got one syllable wrong. That's all it takes. Either the result is no, the mantras are powerful. They can bring about something desired, or they can bring, if there's a mistake, the opposite. So that's what happened. He created from this fire yajna by mantra this personality named Vritrasura, huge trident, beard and hair reddish copper colored, his eyes reddish copper colored, huge mouth, huge teeth, roaring, the whole miles, the whole, everything was shaking. And then as he walked, the earth was shaking. And look how big he is. He's big. And Trashta basically said, go get him. Get Indra. So that's what Vritrasura did. And when Vritrasura started charging towards the demigods, they ran in terror. So then what happened? Indra lost his kingdom. And when Indra lost his kingdom, after cutting off the heads of Vritrasura, of Vishwaroop, and aggravating his father to this degree, then Indra, along with the demigods, they approached Lord Vishnu, and they offered wonderful prayers. Again, Lord Vishnu admonished him. But at the same time, you know, he's a devotee, and he does some bad things, but Lord Vishnu is very kind upon him, and so he made a suggestion. And the suggestion was that you find Didichi. Didichi is a very liberal Brahmin. And you ask Didichi for his bones. Means you have to give up his body to give you his bones. When Didichi gives you his bones, then you take those bones to Vishwakarma. Vishwakarma will fashion a thunderbolt, and by my words, this thunderbolt will be the instrument for you to kill Vritrasura. So Indra was happy again. Notice, happy, unhappy, happy, unhappy. Now, this in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, there's a little description about Dadichi, and you see Dadichi pictured here. And it looks a little different than most people look, because he has a head of a horse. But so this is where the sixth canto description of Hayagriva Brahmavidya comes. Because that's a distinction made by some of the Puranas about the Bhagavatam. That the Hayagriva Brahmavidya could mean a number of things. But specifically, Jiva Goswami very reasonably argues, it's presented in the same section as the Vritrasura pastime. So here's this story. Before they go to Dadichi, let's just go forward a little bit. There's different Hayagrivas mentioned in the Bhagavatam as well as in the Puranas. One of them is a demon. There he is, a demon, Hayagriva. And he was killed by Lord Vishnu because he was trying to steal the Vedas, and Lord Vishnu didn't want a demon to have the Vedas, so he killed Hayagriva. And then there's also mention of a Vishnu avatar form of the Lord whose name is Hayagriva. The Hayagriva, the meaning of the name is he is a form with the head of a horse. So in the Bhagavatam it mentions, and there's not a long description, but Hayagriva gives Brahmavidya, there's the Vedas, to Lord Brahma. And here's another painting of Hayagriva giving Brahmavidya to Brahma. Brahmavidya means transcendental knowledge. And there's another nice painting of the form of the Lord, Vishnu form of Hayagriva. But now there's this one, and the description goes like this. Dadichi, a Brahmin, was known to be very liberal, and he was approached by the Ashwini Kumaras. The Ashwini Kumaras are physicians by occupation in the heavenly planets. And the Ashwini Kumaras came, they approached Dadichi and said, could you give us transcendental knowledge, Brahmavidya? He said, sure. But I'm occupied with the yogi right now. Can you come back and I'll give you Brahmavidya? Now, there was kind of a tension between Indra and these two brothers, twins, Ashwini Kumaras. So Indra approached Dadichi and said, I heard you plan to give transcendental knowledge, Brahmavidya, to the Ashwini Kumaras. Well, I'll tell you, if you do, I'll cut off your head. It gets a little carried away sometimes. So, after some time, the two brothers came back. The Ashwini Kumaras came back and said, okay, we're ready for Brahmavidya. And Dadichi said, well, I've given my word, I'm a Brahmin, I have to keep my word, but there's a problem. What's the problem? Well, Indra said, if I do, he'll cut off my head. That's a problem. He said, no problem. We're physicians. There's a suggestion. We'll cut off your head, put on a horse's head, then you can give, with the horse's head, you can give Brahmavidya. And then when Indra comes along and cuts off your horse's head, we'll put on your other head back again. You'll be normal again. He said, fantastic, let's go. And so here's this same, there's Lord Vishnu, and he gave, now we'll see the next slide. Hopefully it'll be the right one. Yeah. Two forms of transcendental knowledge, Prana Vidya and Narayana Kavacha. Remember the Narayana Kavacha, the mantra that Vishwarup gave to Indra. Well, you know, Indra didn't want someone else to also have Narayanakavacha. That's why that was his issue. I'll have a competitor. But he gave it anyways, because he's a Brahmin. He said he would do so. He kept his word. Now, in the language of the sixth canto Bhagavatam, I'm going to show you, because Jiva Goswami gets into this, this is a distinguishing mark between this Bhagavad Purana that we know. I mean, you don't have a problem with Bhagavad Purana. It's what the BBT is publishing and Prabhupada's purports. We don't have an issue. But some people do. So, the sixth canto, chapter 9, text 51, says that Dadyancha, and Dadyancha is another name of Didichi, gave Ashva Shira mantras, which Ashva means a horse, and Shira means head. So he threw the head of a horse. Didichi gave these mantras or transcendental knowledge to the Ashwini Kumaras. And up top is a little the history of how they came to be the Ashwini Kumaras. And then the next verse, text 51, is the person who gave the Ashvashira mantras is called Ashvashira. He who is horse-headed. Similarly, Hayagriva means horse-headed, just like the form of Lord Vishnu. Different Sanskrit language with the same meaning. And the purport, Prabhupada's purport, says this word Dadyancha and Didichi, they're two names for the same person. So now we're getting to some of the best part. This is a distinguishing mark of the Srimad Bhagavatam that we know, that the other Puranas say, amongst all of the Puranas, this Bhagavad Purana is best. And how do we know which one it is? This is one of the ways that we know which one it is. Hayagriva Brahmavidya, given in relation to the Ritrasura pastime. That's why I'm narrating this. So here's Indra, and he approaches Didichi and asks Didichi for his bones. Pretty outrageous. And Didichi says, Indra, what are you asking? Don't you know? The most dear thing to everybody is their body. You're asking me to give up my body? Please consider what you're asking. Indra was very clever. He said, oh, I have understood that a saintly person, their whole life is simply meant for service to others. And what greater service can there be than giving your life, even your body, for the demigods to regain their position and protect the world and so forth and so on. And so please give us your bones. And Didichi laughed. He said, I was just testing you, see how attached you were. No problem. I'll give you my bones. And he entered into a state of trance and meditation. And he just, like Grandfather Bhishma, he just gave up his body right on the spot. So they extracted his bones somehow and took his bones to Vishwakarma. Vishwakarma fashioned a thunderbolt, gave the thunderbolt, blessed by Lord Vishnu, that this thunderbolt will kill Vritrasura. So now he's feeling happy again. So he goes back to the battlefield. This is Didichi being asked for his bones. Indra's back in action again. He's got his thunderbolt. He goes to the battlefield. A big battle between the demigods and the demons ensues. Huge, detailed description. Very intense combat. And the demons start to flee out of fear. Vritrasura comes onto the battlefield. And two things. He admonishes the demons from fleeing from the battlefield. Cowardly. Kshatriyas don't do this. And then he admonishes the demigods and saying, what are you doing? They're retreating, you're firing at their backs. What kind of Kshatriya code are you? And he takes his trident and his club and starts smashing and crushing them. Look at, there's the demigods, the little guys down there. With his step, he's just crushing bodies. Indra, to fend for the demigods, he takes his club and whirls his club at the head of Vritrasura. The Bhagavatam says with two fingers of his left hand, he takes the club, catches it midair, takes the head of the club and smashes the head of Indra's elephant, Airavata, and he flies back 300 meters, crashing to the ground. Indra looks up at Vritrasura. And they have a little conversation right on the battlefield. And that's what I want to read from, and then we're done. It's because the words of Vritrasura are amazing. That's really the reason that I wanted to read this. Vritrasura Uvacha. Now that fellow on the left. He who has killed a brahmana, he who has killed his spiritual master, indeed he who has killed my brother, is now, by good fortune, standing before me face to face as my enemy, O most abominable one. When I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. Because you remember, brother, because they had the same father. Although Vritrasura was born from a fire, and Vishwarupa was not born from a fire, they had the same father. Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother, a self-realized, sinless, qualified brahmana who had been appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercifully severed his heads from his body. Blameless butchers an animal, Indra. You are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune, deprived of these good qualities. By the reactions of your fruitive activities, you are condemned, even by the man-eater Rakshasas. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain. Really, Kshatriya chivalrous talk. Even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body. Then he changes his mood a little bit. Oops, excuse me, one more insulting one. You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and the other leaders of the ghosts along with their hordes. Now it's where it changes. Because Vritrasura somehow knew of the benediction that was given by Lord Vishnu, that the thunderbolt that was fashioned by Vishvakarma would kill him. So he says, but If in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities, such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni. And what kind of talk is that from that fellow? O king of the demigods, since I, your enemy, is standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You have no doubts about that. Vishnu gave his blessings. It'll be the means for killing me. O Indra, king of heaven, the thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of Dadichi's austerities. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you, therefore your victory, opulence, and all good qualities are assured. So, come on. Honor that. Lord Vishnu's will. You're a servant. Come on. By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires, fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Sankarshan. I shall attain the destination of great sages, such as Narada Muni, just as Lord Sankarshan has said. Now he goes into this meditation on the Supreme Lord. It's amazing. Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality and Godhead, and always think of his lotus feet, are accepted and recognized by the Lord and his own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this material world. By the way, that's what Indra wants. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increases enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. He's on the same side. Our Lord. He's not done yet. It just keeps going. Our Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for dharma, artha, and kama, religion, economic development, and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Indra doesn't get it because he wants material gains. He wants his kingdom back at any cost, practically. Then he just forgets Indra, just focuses on the Supreme Lord. Oh Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be the servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? He's an exalted devotee. Doesn't look like it. Can't tell a book by its cover, right? But when you hear him speak, you can understand what his position is. And then you're starting to understand, wait a minute, This isn't what he appears to be. He's pure devotee. O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, your eternal servants, the servant of your eternal servants, so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes, my words may always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your lordship. O Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, like Shikshastakam, the heavenly planets or the planet where Lord Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be the master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. O lotus-eyed Lord, he's poetic too, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look to their mother to return and feed them, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they are allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. Final verse. O my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, home, and body, wife, children, and home. I don't know if he has a wife or children or home. Anyway, is continuing by the spell of your external energy, but I wish to be attached to them no longer, that my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. Indra is struck with amazement. He's paralyzed. I can't fight that person, although he looks terrible. He's in the topmost platform of devotion. How can I engage in battle with him? So his jaw's on the floor. He's looking at Vritrasara like... So Vritrasara wants to go back to Godhead. And the means for him to go back to Godhead is Indra uses that thunderbolt weapon that Lord Vishnu gave him and finishes him. So to get him off the metal platform, he throws a spear at him, that big trident. So Indra has to do something. So Indra does something, he uses a thunderbolt and breaks the trident. And the battle goes on. This is a very different explanation than Devi Bhagwat's description of Vritrasara. Because here, we're hearing devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the even greater devotion, purer and stronger and deeper conviction of devotion that's possessed by Vritrasara than even Indra. So it naturally begs the question, after this whole story is told and everything is finished, Vritrasara is finished because Indra finishes him. Maharaj Pariksit says, how did this happen? There's a whole, like a series of verses that in order for a worldly person to become situated in devotion, it's very rare, and the person situated in devotion to become exalted devotee is very rare. To come to the position of an Uttama Adhikari, like the Trouser is exhibiting is most rare. How did this happen? Most exalted position. And that leads to another three chapters of the Bhagavatam that describes King Chichiketu, who became exalted through the association of Narada and Angira Muni, but particularly Narada. And so he's commenting about Narada, because the spiritual qualification that one has comes from a merciful Vaishnava. And that spiritual qualification stays with you. In other words, any spiritual Prabhupada taught this from the very beginning. Any spiritual progress one makes is eternal. You may even forget, but it stays with you anyways. Your mind may be out to lunch, but the spiritual qualification doesn't go out to lunch. It may become covered. You may be forgetful, but it stays with you. It's a permanent asset for the soul. So that's very encouraging. It, you know, it may make one think, well, just do like 10% this life, then I'll start at 11% next life. And one of my favorite lectures that I used to listen to, I probably listened to it 100 times, especially this little section of Prabhupada said, like this, you get an opportunity to continue your next lifetime. But then he went on to say, but in the next lifetime, circumstances are very difficult. Even in the course of our short lifespan, those of us been around for a while know, you know, the rate of degradation is shocking. It's fierce. And, you know, younger people are, you know, energetic and hopeful, but, you know, degradation is going on very, very, very rapidly. And when they're older, they also go, oh my God, degradation is happening so rapidly, because it's happening very rapidly. It doesn't become easier in our next lifetime. We're at 11% or 51% or whatever the percent. So Prabhupada's advice was, finish your business up in this lifetime. And one of the best ways to do that is side by side chanting of the holy name with great feeling of taking shelter of Krishna in the form of his holy name, side by side receiving this inspiration of the Supreme Lord from the messages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a good combination. It's the combination that we've been given. And just a last, the time that I spent, you know, it was 5 days, 35 hours, it was exhausting, I think. Poor audience, they got worn out. But the inspiration of the gift that we've been given has grown hundreds of times, hundredfold, as they say. I mean, I've always been a lover of Srimad Bhagavatam, but hearing the glories of the Bhagavatam in the way that Jiva Goswami was presenting, I think that's why I ended up selecting the Bhagavatam section to speak to you about this evening. Bhagavatam is so, besides this, you know, the stories are nice and that kind of thing, there's a potency within Srimad Bhagavatam that's just very special. It lifts one's consciousness to another place. Very potent. Side by side with kirtan, chanting of Krishna's holy name, it's the best. We're doing the right thing. And do it regularly. Do it very carefully in the association of other devotees. You'll be in the best position. Kali Yuga is very dangerous for situation. But the protection is there in these activities. Congregational chanting together hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and becoming living examples of its message. That's what our founder Acharya wanted of us. Okay, so any questions or discussion or comments? Yes?
As related to the interpretation of the Bhagavatam as opposed to the other sources telling the same story is that it's a monotheistic in nature, where the same creator, in this case Vishnu, is the ruler of both parties fighting, and the person may accept that if the angel of death was sent upon me from my creator, as opposed to maybe the other version, there's different gods that are fighting each other.
I'm not sure what you're saying, but specifically, the reason I selected this section was because Jiva Goswami presents the glorification of the Bhagavatam. Some people think it's other than this one. And then Devi Bhagavat, which is the other one, there's, you know, Devi is the source of everything. She's the supreme goddess. And everyone and everything else is dependent upon her. That's the portrayal. So just, I'm not sure what you said, but I hope.
I've seen the others, but you're saying both versions are both monotheistic.
No. Devi is not monotheistic. She's, you know, she's Devi. She's the energy. Doesn't have the same theology. It's not a monotheistic theology. Okay? Yes?
I have one comment.
Please?
Devi Bhagavatam is an Upa Purana.
It's an Upa Purana, that's correct.
And so it wouldn't have the same weightage as what Bhagavatam.
That's correct. Yeah. For those of you that would like some clarification, what an Upa Purana is, there's three categories. There's Mahapurana, Purana, and Upa Purana. In very simple terms, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's 10 topics. In a Purana, there's 5 topics. And the Upa Purana has less than 5 topics. And one of the topics, or two of the topics in both, is creation and dissolution. Now, it doesn't cover that. Your monotheism speaks of that the source is monotheistic. It's a supreme. It doesn't get into that in Devi Bhagavat. It's stories about Devi and, you know, her power, her prowess, and the fact that she also gives knowledge, and she also takes knowledge. She covers people. Something? Yes?
Yeah, not much. I was just trying to understand, what is the quality of Indra by which he's able to attract the... What is the quality of Indra by which he's able to attract this mercy that he's getting from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in spite of him doing all these mistakes again and again?
Well, to get the post of Indra, let's put it this way, step down, to go to the heavenly planets, what to speak of the post of Indra, to go to the heavenly planets, that heavenly realm, there has to be a substantial piety, because it's a place where pious people or God loving, God serving, God devoted persons go, the heavenly planets. What to speak of the king of that place? Now, part of the problem mentioned right in what Vritrasura says is when people have a position or opulence or some respect or something, a post or something, the tendency is to be proud of that. And when one is proud, then one can do any terrible thing. So you've heard me say this before. The fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. So Indra's, the attractive feature is he's more than pious. He's, you know, exceptionally qualified in his devotion and his attraction and affinity for God. At the same time, his heart is not fully pure yet. He has all this opulence and all this position and all this power and all of that, but his heart not fully pure. So largely, he does fine. So we don't hear about all the fine things he does, we hear about the boo-boos that he does. And when he does a boo-boo, then, you know, he has to pay for it, like any one of us. And others, because he's the king of heaven, when a big person does a boo-boo, then other persons also have to suffer, because he's a big person. So it's not advised in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm not directly responding to your question, but commenting in that direction, that aspiring for enjoyment in the heavenly region as one's destination after this life isn't advised in the Bhagavatam. Directly, Vritrasura is saying, our Lord doesn't encourage that. He encourages become simply engaged without motivation in his loving service. And then the destination, this is the Bhagavatam distinction for sure, there's a distinction between the kingdom of God and the heavenly region. And the heavenly region, it's a place for people who are, and why Vishnu is giving his mercy to him is he's devoted. But he's mixed in his devotion. And so these other things come out from time to time. And he has to suffer. Even if he came back. Anything else? Yes? Careful, the volume's up.
Is there a mention of Vritrasura's previous lives or...
Yes. Yes. It comes right after the Vritrasura topic. I mentioned Maharaj Parikshit goes, wow! How did he get that position? Like, you know, even to, he goes through a whole series. That's the most exalted. How did that happen? So it happened because in his previous life he was King Chitraketu. You know the King Chitraketu story? So he was King Chitraketu. And he became topmost devotee through the association of Narad Muni. And then some misfortune came. You know the misfortune. Parvati thought that King Chitraketu was offending Lord Shiva. So she blasted him. She cursed him to become a demon. So he became Vritrasura. But his consciousness of a most exalted devotee stayed with him because you don't lose that. And he performed the role that he was supposed to perform. By his father, he was created to be, the intention was that the enemy would kill Indra. But he got the syllables wrong, so the enemy would be killed by Indra. So that's who he was in his previous life. King. Who then became a perfected person. And then he made a little boo-boo. But Krishna protected him because Krishna protects his devotee. Something else? Yeah.
Thank you very much for the beautiful class. Prior to the advent of Madhvacharya.
Madhvacharya?
Yeah. It not relied on Puranas actually. So God Vyasa mentions Srimad Bhagavatam as the commentary of Vedanta Sutra. Up to 13th century, nobody focused light on Srimad Bhagavatam. It is actually Madhvacharya who started, who related heavily on Puranas. To establish his tattva. Ramacharya did not even touch Bhagavatam.
Well, he certainly touched the itihasas. He was a, you know, many of his devotees were big devotees of Lord Rama. Ramayana is very, very prominent in his his tradition. And this is a point made by Jiva Goswami. Even Shankaracharya honored Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says, he writes, in two ways. He did not corrupt its meaning by making some commentary. But instead, the second is, he wrote some Govindastika, eight prayers, glorifying Govinda, using pastimes that are exclusively found in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami writes, he touched Srimad Bhagavatam for sanctification, but didn't corrupt it. Oh, and then following him, one of Shankaracharya's followers thought, oh, this is maybe part of the canon of the Shankaracharya wanted, so he started making a commentary. He made a commentary before Madhvacharya. But fortunately, it was lost. But what you historically, what you're saying is quite true. Except, you know, the Itihasas, certainly Ramanujacharya made comment on. And here's another little detail Jiva Goswami discloses, that when Gopal Bhatta Goswami was preparing the manuscript that later became the Sandarbhas, he extensively made references to Ramanujacharya's writings and the followers of Ramanujacharya on topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he regularly makes reference to them. Jiva Goswami regularly makes reference to Ramanujacharya's writings because it's right in the text of the manuscript that Gopal Bhatta wrote. So, although the resource may be different, the Puranas aren't saying something different, they're just saying it, you know, in clear language. And the same message is there in the Vedas, just in obscure language. So points made by Ramanujacharya are singled out in the Sandarbhas as, you know, supportive evidence of statements within the Bhagavatam. Anyway, I don't know how the methodology to use. Yes. You don't need a microphone. You're loud.
One comment.
Comment.
Prabhu's question.
It wasn't a question. It was a comment. His comment was that prior to Madhvacharya, the Puranas weren't so prominent.
I have a point to that. Ramanujacharya does quote Vishnu Purana very frequently in the.
Very frequently.
Yeah, very frequently.
In fact, it's the main text, Puranic text, for Sri Vaishnavas, yes, along with Padma Purana, but primarily Vishnu Purana.
And one more point is that Ramanujacharya was not in a position at that time because he was debating against Advaita Vada, which does not really heavily rely on Puranas. So if he propounded his philosophy very heavily based on Puranas,
it would not have been dissected by the people he's arguing against.
Right. But Madhvacharya came a little later. And then he was in a position to use many not so conventional sources of authority.
Not only the Puranas, he had the biggest library in all of India at the time. He had personally gathered as he traveled. Yeah, one Acharya, it's all orchestrated, very, very nicely choreographed by the personality of Godhead. Yes.
Are there new Puranas getting created?
No. No. Emphatically. According to the very detailed, elaborate, systematic, and comprehensive explanation of Jiva Goswami, they're eternal. As the Vedas are eternal, as the soul is eternal, as Vishnu is eternal, the Puranas and Tihasas are co-eternal. They're not created. It's a mistaken notion that is very prevalent and common, promoted by certain puffy-wuffies, It's not true. And there's, and the Vedas say it. And there's, you know, listen to their recordings if you like, or read Tattvasandarbha if you like, and you'll get like a detailed explanation of this. Even asking the question indicates not having a proper understanding of what the Puranas are. They're not creations. They're eternal. And you can read it, you can see. Here's one quote. It's in from Jiva Goswami points to 11th canto, chapter 20. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. It's Uddhava Gita. And Krishna says, it's like five verses in a row. But Krishna says, at the end of Brahma's night, there's a partial devastation. In the following morning, when Brahma awakes, I personally impart the eternal Vedas and the Itihasas and Puranas within his heart. And then he in turn teaches his son Narada. Then he gives another disciplic succession than what we're used to. And then over a period of time, it's very interesting, this original Veda over time and diversity of culture comes in the form of various teachings. So Jiva Goswami asserts that knowledge, material or spiritual, is rooted in the Vedas. But the special point I wanted to, you know, is one, there's multiple, but that's one that's indicating the Vedas, that the Puranas are not creation, modern creations. They're eternal.
This is the story of a particular Indra. Indra is a position, right? So what happens to the story of the next Indra? Does it keep adding to the same thing or how does it go? Then it has to be a living document.
It's a post.
Okay.
If you're going to be a creator, just imagine you're going to be a creator. I think I'll be a creator. So if you're going to be a creator, and the persons that are going to operate the creation, they're born and they die. So the system that's created, that's established, is it's a post, and different living entities occupy those posts. Every time there's a change of manus, there's a whole new set of demigods. And therefore the duration of that manu passes on to the next manu, and the whole, it's like, you know, when a president comes into post, for example, he appoints so many cabinet members. When that president goes out, he's got a whole new set of cabinet members. Similarly, different Indra, different jivas take that post. And some are, you know, some don't do these boo-boo things. And some do them more. You follow?
So Puranas are eternal, but itihasa changes. Is that correct?
No. Let me ask you. When commonly we refer to the Ramayana as Valmiki Ramayana, yes? So, what yuga did Valmiki live in? Satya Yuga. What yuga did Ramachandra come and make his appearance? Treta Yuga. Valmiki composed Ramayana before Ram even came and performed the leelas that he composed the leelas about. Meaning, it's eternal. He just manifested it. It appeared, you know how the whole story goes, it manifested. He started this certain meter and, hey, what's that? And he meter played again and again, then he understood this is a design of the Lord to manifest the meter for the Ramayana. It just manifested through him. It had disappeared from existence and then it appeared. Through him. Same as, you know, it's a long just story. Same as what happened with Vyasadeva. Our Vyasadeva, because once in every four yuga cycles, there's a person that occupies the post. Parashramoni, who is the speaker of Vishnu Purana, that the Sri Vaishnavas especially revere, says, I used to be a Vedavyasa also, two yuga cycles ago, 26th millennia. But this one, he's Narayan himself. Because who else could do what he did? And what he did, Narayana himself came, it's a long, non-Puranic description of the curse of Gautama, you know, without the details. He cursed the Brahmas that they would lose their knowledge, and they did. So, Lord Shiva and Brahma went to Lord Vishnu and said, "Help! The Brahmas are losing their knowledge. Help!" So help come myself and restore that which is lost. So something was there, but just like Krishna says, knowledge is lost when disciplic succession is broken. Same. There are people that are Brahmanas teaching Gobbledygook. So he came to reestablish what the Vedas are. They're eternal, he just manifested them. They had been lost. It wasn't creative writing 101. It was manifesting the eternal Vedas. And he was, you know, superlatively qualified to do that.
What about Chaitanya
Charitamrita? What about Chaitanya
Charitamrita? What does it qualify as? Like, is it a Purana?
No, it's a life of Lord Chaitanya. It's a life of Lord Chaitanya. It's a biography of Lord Chaitanya's life, that's what it is. But within it, because the person who wrote it was on such a high level, it's a high level biography. No, it's not. It's neither. It's a biography of Lord Chaitanya's life. That's what it is. It's a biography of Lord Chaitanya's life.
That explains.
Is that all right?
Okay.
Okay. I think we're going to end.